Welcome. Winning at Life. This is the Daily Wrap. Yeah, it's live financial talk radio. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks. Get the phone. Make the call. 504-260-0995. You want to know where this market's going? Me too. But I have some ideas.
I'm your co-host, James Parker. Yeah, where is this market going? We're going to cover that. We'll cover the numbers on where it went today. We have a couple of fantastic calls from the Saturday version, the weekly wrap. Just spectacular stuff, and we're going to replay some of that for you in today's show. If you have a financial situation, not quite sure what to do, though, this is your show, you lucky dog. 504-260-0995. And for the people who called on Saturday, some of them had a financial situation. They were just driving around with it hanging over their head. They happened upon this show. They called, and they got some information that guided them in the right direction, and they could move on about their weekend with that. Not necessarily resolved, but the weight was lifted a little bit. That's what this show can do for you. 504-260-0995. And kind of split on where I want to start first, because so much happened in the markets today, but then you're going to talk about, Gregory, where these markets are going and where they're headed. And now that we are about a week now separated from the election, some dust has settled, and we have a lot better idea what things are expecting for your money in 2019. So we could do that. We could do the numbers. We could do the call of the week. I'm going to leave it up, or someone wants to call in the next 30 seconds, maybe we'll jump to them. Do you have a preference, Gregory? Okay. Then it will be Graham from New Orleans. The key to this call, actually the key to both of the calls you're going to hear today, is the follow-up questions. Graham in New Orleans, you're next up on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you?
Hi. I'm looking to get a life insurance policy, but I don't know which one to pick, and I don't have any dependents.
What's the reason for getting the life insurance?
Well, I just see like it's just a guaranteed, there's just great savings, and there's some guarantee to the aspect of also having like cash value and growth.
How much excess money do you have?
I have just under, I have about my salary, about $70,000 in savings.
Okay, so how much can you save a year?
I'm about 15%. I'm trying to get it up more, but at the same time, I do want some more growth. I mean, my savings isn't giving me much growth.
Okay, so do you have 401k thing there?
Yes, I get matched. Okay, 3%.
So you're doing that. One of my advisors, Nicholas Rohde, there's a program we have, Max Funding. So a lot of times, and let's go ahead. What's your age, Graham?
I'm 25.
Okay. I took it that you were young, and Nicholas is age 32. But usually when you're young, you're buying life insurance because you don't have big wealth and you have family, mortgage, wife and kids. And if something happens to you,
I don't have
make sure
any expenses.
Right. So you don't have that, but you're also looking at that long range. Could it be a financial tool that you could create wealth from? Here's where I'm going with this is we've got a strategy we call max funding, and life insurance can be one of the tools used to make that work. And we've got a strategy where we can take and use a indexed universal life, meaning it grows when the market grows, but if the market goes down, it does not go down, using annual reset as the core strategy.
Again, Graham, what'd you say?
Like, which markets are y'all talking about? Like small cap value, like just really diverse?
Well, we're not going to look. It sounds like you're talking about variable life. So you've got term insurance, you've got whole life insurance, you have universal life insurance, and you have variable life insurance. Variable life is connected to actual market investments inside that account value. I'm not a big fan of that because it's typically not managed properly. If you're using a variable annuity or variable universal life, you're almost needing to monitor and manage that like it's 401k. And I'm not a believer on buy and hold forever and everything's going to turn out fine there. But you need to, you know, probably have reallocations done. And there's times where you maybe should not be fully invested. So that's how I think about that. But life insurance, if I'm using life insurance, I think of more as certainty. And if I'm using annuities, I'm using it more as certainty, not as risk. We can get, if you want risk, we can go directly to Wall Street, and we handle a lot of that. And we have a whole different philosophy and rules about managed money. So if we're going to use a life insurance product that we're wanting to accumulate money and build money in, I'm going to go more the index route with life insurance because it has larger caps. And we know historically, you look historically at the market, what does it do? Typically rises 7 out of every 10 years. So that means we're mostly getting the up. So what happens when it doesn't rise? Then you return 0 because there's no negative impact to values. So it's a pretty good win situation. And give you an example here of how I would give you guidance on the show of using it is to think about it this way. Nicholas put together a strategy putting $6,000 a year into a universal life insurance program. And I think we just kind of used about a 5% return forecast estimate on returns. The historicals are larger, but putting in $6,000 a year for 30 years, which means he would have put in $180,000. That next year, he would start taking out in loans $36,048. By age 91, he would have taken out $1,081,000. And let's assume he dies that year. The life insurance would, death benefit would pay off the loans, which means that he took out $900,001 in tax-free money. And that's really what this is about, an opportunity at your age with Roth money. And if you're looking at insurance as a strategy, why not build a cash machine that can pay you $1 million that you'll never have to pay taxes on? That's kind of my guidance.
Is that what you had in mind, Graham?
Just you're saying you would always take universal over variable? Because if you just want to go,
if you're asking me what would I do, 100% of the time I would take universal over variable. There's my answer. And I would, if I were you, I would call Nicholas at my office on Monday and have a discussion with him about max funding.
Hey, I'm impressed that you're 25 and you're looking at life insurance as an investment vehicle. I mean, you seem to have your head.
One of my buddies is a financial rep, and just like we talk about it. And it still has me wondering, like, what about, like, whole life over universal or comparable? Like, if y'all want to compare those position, what do you think would be of more value?
The reason we would use universal life is we feel we have more upside than whole life. But variable, you're adding risk into the mix and additional fees. If I have time, like I said, I would use a indexed universal life, and I'm going to create a money machine that I'm not going to pay taxes on. So you get this, instead of $6,000 a year, what if you put $12,000 in, then you're taking $72,000 a year in tax-free income and would receive, if you live to 90, which is likely for you, you're going to receive $2 million in tax-free income over retirement.
All right, so that the key to that one was all the follow-up questions here. And when I went back and I had to cut that out of the podcast to replay on today's show, it almost sounded like a setup, Gregory. If I went and I played this for some of our friends who have financial shows in other towns, they'd be like, come on, how'd you get Graham to call? It was almost too perfect, because you talk about these scenarios, but very rare do you see someone just go in and walk right through the pages of the life insurance textbook. But life insurance as an investment.
Yeah, but you could see, just question here, question there, and I'm figuring out what's going on, that his friend is a registered rep, and his friend's talking to him about variable. When he started asking investment questions, I'm like, well, oh, you're talking about variable. In that case. Yeah, I've done this a while. I do it every day. There's a meeting I had today regarding a variable life. Gentleman came in, wanted to see, well, am I doing the right thing? Where am I at? And we spent most of the meeting talking about a variable annuity that has a annuitization. The income rider, he would have to annuitize it. And then we're discussing it. It has a life income with a period certain. So I'd explain to him what that meant. However, he said, I want it to be joint life annuitization, and his wife's a few years younger. So then I was explaining to him on the statement that you just received showed that you pulled out, say, $17,000. And I said, the income rider option said it shows on statement based on your life with a period certain. And keep in mind, as you grow older, the period certain gets less and less. And I said, if you defer up to 5 years from now, that annuitization is not as much as you're taking out now, because he's taking distributions. And I said, and you are intending to take some more distributions before turning on the income rider, which is annuitization, and you're doing it joint. These numbers are larger than the benefit you're going to receive. Well, that's not what I was told. I said, I understand what you were told and what the statement differs. Cut to the chase, I said, and that's most of what we talked about. We talked about a couple other things briefly. We're going to get together and talk some more. But I suggested to him that he calls the service center for the variable annuity company and ask them, based on where he's at with a joint life payout, what is that income going to be? And then do 1 year deferral and what that year is going to be. And then ask them, if I do this, is there anything that could end the payments without us both dying? Then you'll know where you're at.
I'm James Parker. We're Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks.
Because, baby, I just don't trust myself
with you.
I better hide the wine.
Hide that wine. Hey, this is Winning It Life, the daily wrap. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks, along with James Parker. We were just talking on the break there. These fires out in California. James was saying, death toll's up to 42. And what'd you comment?
It's just hard for me to fathom how someone could get caught up in a fire. It's not like it sneaks up on you. It's not a surprise. It's not like you can't see it coming.
Oh, I wondered that too. And I saw an interview with a fella, and I'm staying. Yeah. Well, the fire's gone. I know, but I'm going to make sure this area is defended. So what he's talking about, he's going to stay there with his water hoses and spray. And look, when the fire does not like move along like a hurricane, how fast a hurricane goes? 16 miles an hour or something?
Depending on the hurricane, but yeah.
Yeah. So how fast does a fire move?
Probably like 5 miles an hour, maybe.
I think it's a lot quicker.
You think it might be quicker than that?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's actually a really good question.
That is a good question. And fires don't come from just one direction. You know, earlier in this fire, we heard about a dozer and its driver being killed. And the dozer was burned. It was a giant dozer. And you know what happened? He got surrounded.
Oh, that's
there
so
was
scary.
No escape. It's the fire. Okay, if everything's dry around your acre property, which way is it coming from?
Any direction.
Wow. You don't know. And all sides, and you're going to stay. You know, we heard about some of those people in Mexico Beach. Yeah, I'm staying. Well, last time I saw, after that hurricane went through, there was, I think, only one structure left standing on Mexico Beach. And yeah, there's missing people. Why? Their buildings they wanted to stay at weren't going to survive.
While
they didn't have this many people die on Mexico Beach, not that many stayed behind.
Wildfires in forests move at about 6 miles an hour. In grasslands, they can move up to 14 miles an hour.
Pretty quick.
Faster than I can run.
Yeah. Once it's on you, yeah, you got a problem.
Yikes. That's a horrible way to go, Gregory.
Oh, it look in disaster. I think the hurricane surge of water coming in, I think that's drowning. I would think's horrible way to go to get caught up in that. And a fire has to be tremendously horrible as well. When you know it coming, I don't know how long you'll last, but however long it is you're lasting till you pass out and become unconscious, it's a horrible couple minutes there. I would get the heck out. Wouldn't like, you don't have enough water, and the whole problem is everything's dry and you're not getting it wet enough, deep enough, far enough away for it to stop. Because two things, fire will jump. It jumps across highways, and then the cinders and stuff flying through there. It is no hope when it's heading your way. You just need to leave and then return, and hopefully it jumped over your property. I can't imagine that. And it's then they said this is like the worst ever.
This is it. Yeah, this is the worst.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I feel pain for all those people losing their properties, the one losing their lives. The one that touches me the most is last year's fires, where grandmother and kids burned as granddad was trying to get back and was talking on the phone to them.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, that's
why. Was that the Napa Valley?
Yeah. That still touches me deep. It's like, oh my gosh. Having to, you know, you won't never forget that last few minutes with your family that was lost. Really horrible. And I just think, you know, when things are bad and you need to get out, get out.
Hey, maybe my Tuesday wasn't so bad. You know, it was a bit of a drag, but seeing these pictures on TV, we got pretty good today.
Yeah, it's really something. Okay, back to... In the first segment, we played the call from Saturday regarding the life insurance, the variable out there. And then I had a meeting today that kind of carried over on that. And basically, I suggested the individual call that annuity insurance company, variable insurance company, and find out more about what's the payouts, because what he gets is a story, and the rep that he's been talking to, it seems like the stories don't add up, because what I did was pull the prospectus out. You know, when there's risk, it has a prospectus, which should tell you something. And gosh, I don't know. It's like 100 pages. And I took him through different sections, put it up on the big screen, and read certain paragraphs to them. I said, well, that kind of contradicts from what they're telling you. And then I showed him the paragraph. Well, yeah, your wife's 4 years younger, so that payout is going to be based on her age, which is younger than yours, which means a lower payout. Joint payout's going to be a reduction because one of you is living longer than the other. They have to account for that. So I wanted him to know what's coming. And then the other important question is, what would cause these monthly payments to stop if they're, you know, I didn't read the 100 pages. We were in a meeting, so I was going through the high points with him that I found in the prospectus. And like, and he had had it for 10 years, going on 11 years now. And I just said, you know, it, and we talked about what he was told, what it's supposed to do. I said, oh, that's water under the bridge. I said, it doesn't matter what you were told, what you thought you were getting. It's where you are now, and you need to find out if this is going to do what you expect it to do, and how much is it going to pay out. And the rest of the conversation is about required minimum distributions. You know, I've got multiple IRAs. When does that start? Can I take it from each account, or can I take it all for one? And how does this one affect? So let's break that down real quick. I think it's good information. So let's say this variable annuity, he converts to life income or joint life income, and it's more than 5 years.
Why aren't you calling this annuitized? or annuitize or whatever.
Well, yeah, it's annuitization. He's going to annuitize it. We refer to as annuitize.
Okay.
But it's through joint life, so he's going to annuitize it on life income table. So that will no longer have a fair market value or count, or if there's a payment to him that's more than what the RMD would have been on that contract, that will not count as any credit towards his other IRA accounts that are going to have RMDs. And he said, well, I may annuitize some of the others. And I said, well, depending on how that income rider works, may or may not be beneficial towards meeting RMDs of a larger account that he has, that he self-manages. And he recently, a few months ago, put the cash because he felt he wasn't doing very good with it. So I said, hey, very good move. And so kind of explained to him that he could take RMDs from each of the accounts. If there were income riders turned on, that could count towards the overall RMD aggregate of accounts, excluding the one we discussed earlier. So there's a couple of scenarios. And I said, each of these companies are going to send out paperwork to you reminding you have an RMD to take. I said, as a firm, if we were working with you, we would take ownership to make sure you understood how this worked, what your RMD numbers, what might be the best way to take those distributions. I said, your person should be able to handle that for you. Now, he had quite a bit of money that he was still managing on his own. And I said, well, it was just a curious question. I said, well, so how did you keep this money away from this guy that's putting everything, it seems, into variables and such? He said, oh, well, I just told him no, he wasn't getting it. I said, well, you know what? That's a pretty good thing, because he'd have probably put it all in this stuff too, that's super complicated. Look, you need to get a second opinion, I think, especially on variable annuities. I think they went out with bell bottoms, you know, kind of like something to put it to in the timeline. You know, they're out of style and those aren't coming back, I don't think. So
I'm with you on that one.
Get a second opinion, whether it's a variable, fixed interest, or fixed index, and make sure you're getting the rest of the story, not just part. The whole truth and nothing but the truth. Then had another meeting today. Fella was asking about, you know, with the market and what's going on, what are the options? He has this risk number, but he's kind of like, where should I be? Because this market thing doesn't always work all the time. And I said, that's an important phrase. It's one I like. It's similar to that. I said, everything does not work all the time. You have some great strategies, but it does not work all the time. So he's looking, well, what portion should I keep out of risk? I said, you're probably 60-40 based upon your risk number, maybe 65-35 there to keep balance and have money that will not go down when the markets go down, and create some balance, create some alternatives there. So that was another discussion we had today as well.
504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. We're Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
504-260-0995. I know you're absorbing all this information, but if you have a question, give us a call. I'm Gregory Ricks, your host, along with James Parker. This is Live Financial Talk Radio. One other thing I didn't mention to him, and I mentioned to you on the break, James, regarding this variable. You know, if you go back and look at the past decade, a lot of financial firms has unwound or sold off their variable annuity and variable life divisions. Why? It's not profitable. It's kind of where, which sounds like the structure of this contract this gentleman had, sounds like it's going to work fine for him. I don't know what that annuitization number is, But B&E put in, say, 280 and has taken distributions and reduced that down. I don't know if some of that's market losses and how much of that was fees, but he still could annuitize a payout of $270,000. And if he, and let's just say he did it on his life income, because we know that number is $13,000 a year. And he, let's say he's 65 and lives to 85. That's what, $260,000 out?
Right.
Yeah. So that's pretty much his 270 on the annuitization number. And he put in, I don't know, 250, and now he has 74 left. So he's taking distributions. I don't know what, how much of that is market losses and such, fees, but, right. But that doesn't seem like good math for the variable company, does it? So you can see where it's got to work on both sides. The consumer has to have value and get what they expect, and honesty about what they should be getting, not this talk around and where he's been taking distributions of say 17,000 a year. And he was expecting that when he annuitized it, that's what he was going to get. And I said, no, your statement clearly says what you're going to get on a life period certain. How long's a period certain? It doesn't say. Now in the prospectus, it says to call the company and ask them. It doesn't give tables or anything. So it's a, oh, it's a variable. So, you know, it's just, when you read through that, gosh, could you just get it more complicated and unknown? So he's got to call the company and find out more about what's going on. I was just like, it's been a long time since I sat and held a meeting and we talked about one thing for about 45 minutes. And there's more to talk about. He's got other issues and needs some help in other areas, but I thought that was, it was one of his questions, one of his concerns. And I thought we would address it since it's his biggest thing. I'm turning on income from this and he's expecting it to continue what he's been taking in distributions. And I don't think it's going to do that. That's why I suggested he call.
I'm a little curious to see what it looks like when you break down a prospectus. I got a prospectus one time I read it, or I didn't even read the whole thing. I started to attempt to read it.
Does anybody read all of them?
No, I don't think anybody does. And in fact, I remember in my business class in college, it's like, you're going to get a prospectus. Don't worry. You're not going to read this. Nobody does. That was in my head when I got a prospectus. It was when I worked for the satellite radio company and I threw the company plan, got some stock and they sent me one. I started reading it and I'm like, okay, I don't understand half of this.
A prospectus. What is its purpose is to make sure you're aware of all the things that could go wrong. They're not talking about all the wins in it. They're talking about all the things that can go wrong, how it works and what can go wrong. What are all the fees and the things you have to do at certain times?
That seems such a weird law that they require people to be presented with the prospectus.
So yeah, you get on a variable annuity, you get this prospectus and they send it to you each year and it seems to get thicker each year as it goes. And then if you get a fixed indexed annuity, you get a few page brochure.
No prospectus there, huh?
No prospectus. Now, if there's an income rider, you can get a separate brochure for that. Why? Because it's guarantees. It's very specific versus a variable. You get a prospectus. Client was in today for a review and she had a variable account with a company and she was out of surrender and the bank she had gotten it from, it's just been blowing up her phone. She said, yeah, some new guy there has been calling me and trying to tell me that it's out of surrender, that they can move it and guarantee this. And they do a 1035 and that she wouldn't want to talk to me about it. Cause he said, well, you know, he's just going to make more money off of you. And so we reviewed our fees and I said, I'm not make. There are no other fees going to be taken from your account if we take over this for you. And so, yeah, we're handling it for her, but the banker was just keeping after her about that. And what she wanted was more safety instead of risk, but it was just, but at the end of the meeting, she pulls out this.
Did she have a prospectus?
Yeah. And I swear it was like 2 inches thick.
Who's going to read
it? And then
that?
There was another one that wasn't as thick. She said, well, we're taking care of this and moving it out of, do I need this anymore? I said, no, you're not going to need that anymore. And you won't be sent these type of things in the future regarding this block of your money. She said, okay, good.
These paperwork requirements are so weird.
I know, but you think she read any of that?
No, no one does. And it defeats the whole purpose of having a prospectus. What good is a warning label if no one reads it?
Yeah, but think about it. 2 inches thick.
I bet you zero people
read
that.
For somebody on the backside of 65 having to, like, okay, I've got to sit down and read this.
No way.
I'm kind of like, if I've got to read this, then I don't need this. That's where I'm at.
Hey, that sounds
like
something I'd say.
I'm a money manager, but if I've got to read that, for that block of money, I don't think I'm doing this. That's way too complicated.
But I can you just imagine college age James being in a class and going, why do they send people this again? Well, this is for people who don't understand stocks. Well, if you don't understand stocks, why are you buying them? Well, that's what the prospectus is for. Oh, okay. So they don't understand stocks, but they can understand what's in the prospectus.
Well, you get more of this like mutual funds, ETFs, variable annuities. You know, when you think of an annuity, that's an income tool ultimately.
Sure.
And I would think if I'm getting income, it's more secure than risky, right? I'm thinking of income. If I'm taking income and I'm retired, how long am I going to need it? A couple years or longer? I'm going to need it a long time. Well, how risky do I want it? How much fees do I want to take out? Oh yeah, I'm going to need this money probably 30 more years. So let's put it to risk and let's put it to high fees. That's the plan. Great. I'm glad you showed up at my doorstep. Thank you. And I'll enjoy reading this 2-inch book you're going to send me each year. When you think about it, if you're doing that or thinking about it, you need to stop. Like, this sounded ridiculous, but people are doing this every day with their future. And they're being told, oh, well, you do this for long, you get this income, and then it turns out they're not getting that income.
See, this prospectus is really sounding like a cop-out. These guys, these salesmen can tell you whatever they want to tell you, and legally speaking, when they go to court, they can say, well, it was in the prospectus. I gave it. It was all on paper in black and white and plain English here for anyone to read on their own. It's almost like an absolution for the guys that are doing some chicanery. This doesn't protect the consumer. This protects the company in the face of the consumer is what it does. This prospectus nonsense. Seems
yeah.
Silly.
I'll define. If you can kind of get through the first 5 pages, I guess you deserve it then.
I didn't make it that far.
But because I think the first 5 pages typically, and depends, maybe it's more when they're 2-inch thick, but should scare the bejeebies out of you. Yeah, we had a discussion about it was like private REITs, which are non-tradable REITs. And I said, well, yeah, that means you can't, there's not a buyer on the other side. He said, yeah, that's what I figured out. I don't like those. There's not a buyer on the other side. I said, well, that's what makes the stock market work, because there's always a buyer on the other side. Maybe not at the level you want to sell it at, but there's a buyer at a price.
All right, where's the market headed next? That's where we're headed next. 504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. We're Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks.
Let yourself go and follow that feeling.
Hey there, it's Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks, your wallet's favorite show. How you doing? I'm your co-host, James Parker. If you have a financial situation, not quite sure what to do, call Gregory, 504-260-0995. Coming up in just a minute, we're going to go over the numbers of the day, and then we'll let you know where the market's headed right after that. Steve, Homa, you're next up on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Steve?
James and Gregory, look, thank y'all so much. Let me just say, long-time listener, I'm hurting bad because I hadn't made my appointment with y'all guys because I'm going to be 65 in January, okay? So I had this question about, hypothetically, that if I end up like in a fixed annuity and also an indexed annuity, because that would give a little growth, we're just talking hypothetically, is if I get on the stick right now at 65, well, then I'll have maybe gone through those surrender charges and fees by the time I get 70. It'd be smart to get with it, huh?
Well, on fixed annuities, if you're using it, and I kind of think of them as bond-like tools.
Yes, sir.
A fixed indexed annuity, and I can't name names on the show without running 5 minutes of disclosures at the end, but we've got several that we like really well from historical performance, and there is no fees on these. No, nothing's taken out of your account value.
Wow.
Now, if you're adding an income rider to a fixed indexed annuity, there's going to be a fee for that income rider. So basically we're saying, unless you're adding something specific to it, there is no fees. On a fixed interest annuity, once again, there's no fees coming out of that account.
Yes, sir.
Now the surrender period is for a full walk away, meaning there's a fee to exit. That's your liquidity. There's a fee you pay to be able to undo it all. With that said, if you're wanting to start distributions year two, year three, year five, you can start taking income and distributions from that, even though it still may have a few years on the surrender period. We don't like annuities that go beyond 10 years on annuities, on fixed indexed annuities. Typically, we're working in a range of 7 to 10, depending on what the client needs done. And if you're using a fixed interest annuity, it's specific to that interest rate guarantee period. So if you're getting a 5-year, and I'll just call it a 5-year CD annuity, you'll have a exit fee for surrender during that 5 years.
I'm talking about, and yeah, Gregory, I have stuff that the interest rate went up, but I'm trying to stay from restarting those CDs for 5 years and hold off till I come see y'all. And so I got to really get with it. And I apologize for not seeing y'all earlier because, boy, I'm hurting. And what happens is, I want to mention to you in regard to prospectuses. I didn't know a darn thing about prospectuses either, but I read them enough to where the 12B1 fees became you and incorporated. So they were hard to read. But if you're desperate like me and you want to find out what's going on with your money, well, I read enough of them, I could compare what was going on, and then I learned how to read them. So desperation was more for me than inspiration, and I really appreciate your program, and I'm going to be getting over there. I'm taking care of everybody else but me, so thank y'all very much once again.
Hey, Steve, and did I catch you're within 3 months of your 65th birthday?
Yes, sir, and I went and applied for the Medicare, as you're supposed to do, 3 months before.
That's right. Just wanted to check. All right.
Yeah, and look, James, I figured you were going to say that, and I appreciate it. And so thank y'all so much. Y'all great. And, of course, the website's got all kinds of information. What can I say? Thank y'all once again.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you, Steve.
Come appreciate see us it. Beginning of the year.
All right. What a great guy. Glad to help him out again.
Yeah. Now, that's another one you could accuse of being a setup. They're like, where'd you find him at and get him to call?
Yeah, you even plugged your website at the end.
Yeah, plug the website.
Sometimes y'all shouldn't be so nice when you call. Just say, James is ugly or something in there. So they don't.
But
think
you
it's
know,
setup.
Sometimes people do confuse a surrender period with not having access to that. If we're setting up one of those accounts for the safe money, the risk averse, is you've got access to the money during the surrender period. You can turn on income. This doesn't lock you out from having access. So that's kind of one of those urban myths. Oh, I can't get to it for 10 years.
It's, you know, some of them,
you can start income immediately, meaning take out distributions.
We've
had CD annuities, say a 5-year. And you know, and I talk to people like, do you think 4% is a reasonable expectation over time? I said, yeah, we're getting 4% on 5-year CD annuities now. That's net money to you. So yeah, we can get 4% as a reasonable expectation. So if your money works based on a 4% outlook going forward, I'd say you're in pretty good shape. What, we're over 3% on 10-year treasuries. So not too far. What, we're on 3-year treasuries, 3.4, CD annuities, 5-year, 4%.
What, we have the people that call in, they're like, my surrender period's almost up. What do I do with it now? Nothing.
You shouldn't have to do anything. But what I find is when surrender periods end, people are getting lit up, like calling, oh, we need to do this. You
churn.
Can do this. Yeah, it's a churn. That should be a warning to you. Like, I need to call Gregory and get a second opinion is what that's what should click in your head. If somebody's kind of saying, yeah, your surrender's up. We need to do this, this, and this with it. Well, it should. What it means is surrender period's up means the clock is up. It should be able to continue doing its job. The only reason you move is, well, it wasn't doing what it was supposed to, what I thought it was. Then, yeah, that's a reason to move it, but it needs to be justified, not just because the surrender. Do you want to keep money in surrender forever? You know, you were in a surrender period. You want to go into another one? Not really, unless it could do what it's supposed to do.
All right. In the shortest version of the numbers ever, it was a little bit of red, nothing too bad. The big news, the only thing that really moved huge today was oil is continuing its drop. It entered bear territory at the end of last week, dropped another $5 today. But the big question is, Gregory, where is the market headed after this?
Look, we have pretty big concerns. We've had some breakdown in its levels. Friday, yesterday, which was Monday, today is Tuesday. So we had some pretty big concerns on where this is going to go. Some of the levels we were concerned about it breaking through. Now, where did the S&P close today, James? You got that number there?
Yeah, 2,722.
Yeah, so we broke down below 2740. Another important level is 2718. It did move that during the day, 2714. Yeah, and looking at time and price is a concern, but we had levels that we were watching at 2749, 2745, and 2740, and it broke through all those. And what we're also seeing trending is lower lows, lower highs. You know, we sold half Apple yesterday. We sold Netflix. I can name others. In our ETF, we sold the S&P 500, the NASDAQ, the Russell. We sold out. We're actually stepping back, and 401ks we started putting to stable value as well today. So we're sending out a notification to all clients tomorrow what our concerns are that this market could possibly break down further going forward. And yes, well, the GDP's fine, and we got 3% on 10-year treasuries. The jobs number's low. Yeah, but somebody's selling. And here's a discussion we had in the trading room this afternoon, too, because my thing is, I've said a while back, we had globally the central banks buying the market, you know, Japan, Switzerland, a lot of massive amounts. And I said, well, what happens when they start selling? Because here we think things are pretty good, but, and I was talking with Cody about, and he brought, and I didn't think about it. He said, well, maybe they're not selling. They just aren't buying anymore. If there's not enough buyers at your price, or if you're selling, yeah, I'll buy it. Yeah, I'll buy it. Oh, I'll buy yours too. There's not buying going on at that level. So there's not as much support to keep the prices up or buying at higher levels. There's buying at lower levels. And then how long is buying on the dip going to work? It's going to work until the dip keeps going lower, and the next, then it bounces up and there's a lower. Oh, do you keep buying it as it goes down? We chose to, we're done buying. We bought into the dip last week and we may sell those positions. We're concerned about protecting values, and we're wanting, and we're in the process of reducing the portfolios as this continues to look unstable. And something you didn't mention is there's a talking head on TV this morning. So yeah, oil's at its bottom. It was 58 and some change. Where did it close, James?
55.
Yeah, he's way off. And we're producing 2 million barrels a day more than we were 2 years ago. And we're forecasting 2020 to be producing another 2 million barrels a day. OPEC can't cut enough and reserves keep going up. Hey, I've got an event. There might be a couple seats. Call the office tomorrow night if you want to hear me speak in person. The office is 504-832-9200. If you would like to have a daytime discussion and talk to real fiduciaries, real money management that are involved in this on the day-to-day, then you want to call my firm, 504-832-9200, gregoryricks.com.
I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.